You're listening to Zen Crossing, where spirituality meets everyday life, with your host, Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center.
Today we'll be talking about the heart of monastic training. Our guest is Chunmun Sanim. Chunmun Sanim began studying with Zen Master Sun San in his native Poland in 1980. In 1986, he came to train at the Providence Zen Center. He has participated in many, many retreats, both in the U.S. and in Korea. He was given authorization to teach in 2002, and in 2009, in September, he left for Korea and underwent traditional Korean monks training in Pomasa Temple in Busan. In 2015, Chunmun Sanim took his full bhikkhu precepts. Chunmun and I go back a ways. He hired me as a carpenter's assistant when I first came to this island, even though I wasn't much of a carpenter. And he's been in and out of the life of our Sangha ever since. Chunmun Sanim, it's great to see you.
It's great to be here.
Chunmun Sanim, what first attracted you to Zen, to study with Master Sun San Sanim?
Well, I grew up in communist country, in communist Poland, and as a student in high school, I got really interested in yoga and Buddhism. And at that time, you couldn't just go to the bookstore and buy a book. All of the books which were on the market were printed illegally. So my friend was distributing some of those books, so I read a lot. And then after, you know, being interested in discussing a lot of yoga, samadhi, enlightenment with my friends, I realized I really don't know anything about it. And I knew one of them, the guy who was actually distributing the books, that he sits with Zen Master Sun San, who came to Poland first time in 78. So in 1980, I just decided I really wanna try it. So I asked this friend of mine, hey, can you give me the address and time when there is next retreat? And he did, and I went, sat 3 days. It hurt a lot. My knees were swollen, and it was a lot of pain, but I was also kind of clear and had a lot of energy after that. Mm. So that was the beginning. So I liked it so much, I immediately went and set next month 7-day retreat and then 3-day retreat. And on the third retreat, this was when strikes in Poland happened and solidarity was created. So we witnessed that during the retreat, you know. So, and from that point on, then in the fall, some teachers came and I said, I took precepts. Zen Master Sun San was declined or refused visa to enter Poland that year. But next year he came, so I met him for the first time actually in person in 81. And in communist Poland, we had three sanghas at that time, Buddhist sangha. There was Tibetan Karmakagyu sangha, there was Kaplo Roshi, Japanese Zen, and Korean Zen, and Master Sun San. So I started with Sun San Sunim, and I liked him, so I stayed. But I also visited the other two, and I met Kaplo Roshi in person, and I met some Tibetan teachers, but I didn't have much connection with that, so it was self-evident. It was very easy, actually, choice. So,
well, yeah, and you kept going and going, eventually coming over to the States. And then, at age 49, you decided to go to Korea and become a monk. What was that about?
I was not good in too many things, I guess. What happened was, when I was a kid, I always thought about becoming a monk. Before I met Buddhism, I thought about becoming a Catholic monk, seriously. Mm. But never could do this. And then throughout my training or practice with Zen Master Sun San, I always had this thought in mind, I want to become a monk. But my life went different directions. Yeah. So finally I realized that actually I'm not really that good or interested in making money, buying a better house, going on vacation, having a better job, relationship. It just didn't interest me. So I was thinking, then it became clear that this is not the right thing for me to do. Because I tried. I tried many times and it didn't work. So finally, I decided, okay, you always wanted this, so just go and do it.
How does it feel now?
Well, now I'm a little bit nervous about being on the radio. So. But if you ask about the decision, I never had any regrets or looking back or thinking I should have done something else. Now, once I've done it, the hardest part was make a decision.
Yeah.
And when I made it, I didn't reveal this decision to anybody. It was a process. It wasn't anything sudden. And then once it was made, like the whole universe was helping me to go to Korea and do it. So it became very easy. I mean, it was not easy process, but going in that direction was not difficult. So.
When you arrived, you were the only foreigner at your temple in a class of about 25.
Yeah, total number of monks in the monastic training center in Pomosa was 40 when I arrived. And then less and less monks were coming. So when I was graduating, was about 30 in the whole training center. In my class, between 7 and 10. Monks.
I don't know if you knew what you were signing up for, but was it what you expected? Did it surprise you?
Reality is usually much more interesting than our expectation of it. So fortunately, I've been in Korea, so I knew a little bit. I liked Korea. I liked Korean people. I felt very good whenever I was going to Korea. And so that was easy for me. But no, what was going in the temple? Yeah, there were some difficult moments. But actually, surprisingly, what helped me was my lack of Korean language, knowledge of Korean. I didn't know Korean at all. I asked my teacher to send me to language school before I went to training center, became a novice monk. And he looked at me and said, absolutely not. You know, he was very serious. I was talking to him through a translator, and he said, Korean language is not necessary. You know, you go to temple, you learn temple life. And I think he was really wise, had a lot of wisdom, because temple is a small place. So the temple life, you know, happens in temple compound. So everybody's talking about everything. Good thing, and mostly about bad things of which happened there. And I didn't understand any of that. For me, it was very easy to look at everybody with kind of not admiration, but all of the monks who were there, they knew more than me. Mm. So they could teach me something. And having this attitude was made it very easy, because all of the small talk, it went just right by me. Yeah.
What was the one phrase you said you knew? You knew enough Korean?
Oh, yeah. When I was the first year monk, the only thing you could actually say in response to anybody talking to you, and there were only monks talking to you, was 예수님 or 네 스님, which means yes. Yes, monk. Because you couldn't say no. And I learned that very well. I could say that with no accent, and my Korean was perfect. So it wasn't difficult. If you went, just follow the situation, and I tried to follow my classmates, and I quickly understood enough Korean to recognize time when they were telling us some time. I knew we have to be somewhere at this time. I didn't know why, but I knew that we had to be ready. So that was enough. Yeah.
Your teacher, Sun Sansanim, has used a phrase often that I really like and sometimes use myself, don't know mind.
Yeah.
How did that show up in your practice of the temple?
It showed up pretty much every day because I didn't know anything. Yeah. Like whenever there were some explanations given in Korean, I just didn't know what they were talking about. When we had classes, I didn't know what the teacher was talking about. So I had to keep it on know.
What did you do in those cases? Did you just do Zazen? Did you just meditate?
I was lucky. I was lucky to go to Pomosa because there were the head of this monastic training institution, his title is Kangju, head of the Kangwon. He spoke some English. he spoke some English, and I often took walks with him, you know, as a young student in the Kangwon, and I learned quite a bit from him, you know, from bits and pieces. And during the classes, actually, most of the Buddhist texts, we have English translations of them. So they were looking at Chinese, because Buddhism is in the Far East, they use Chinese, classical Chinese, or Korean translation. I was looking at English text, and I could follow. I knew what was the curriculum. I knew when we were doing Diamond Sutra, I was lucky. They had one book. I had four translations, okay, of Diamond Sutra. So I could follow somehow. But I also spent a lot of time during lectures. We had one time a day in the morning. We had only one time a day on the weekdays, a lecture. So it wasn't a school, but it was part of our training. I often looked at the Compass of Zen teaching, Zen by Sung Sansunim, this book. And in the beginning, there are chapter headings, and Sung Sansunim wrote them in Chinese. So I was deciphering his Chinese characters. He used a lot of Japanese versions and trying to make my own translation understand what was that about. It actually helped me a lot in understanding Buddhism and his teaching, yeah. So.
There's a real emphasis, isn't there, on together action at a monastery like that?
Not only there is an emphasis on it, it's just actually the basis of the monk training is together action. See, this training center I was in, it's the name in Chinese is Kangwon, which means lecture center. And in English we say sutra school. In Korean, they call it Sangha University, but it's not a school. There are no grades. And first year, often during our class, we either drank tea with the teacher or talked about all different difficult things which happened to first-year monks because we're always busy doing chores and work around the temple, particularly during the first year. So the sutra school or university is not the right term. The right term is monastic training center. And the whole training is based on together action. Because as long as it was only difficult when I had some ideas about what I want or how I would do this, when I appeared, problems appeared. I used to tell to Korean people in my rudimentary Korean. They asked me, oh, is it difficult? I said to them, if thinking appears, it's very difficult. If thinking disappears, it's very easy. And then you just follow. You just act as one, you know, with other monks, and harmony appears naturally. So the same, if you learn that, or if you live through that, experience that enough in the training, then you can use it in your life. And not interject your I and your opinion and what you like and don't like in your daily interaction with the other beings or with the world, you know? So yes, the together action, without that, there is no training, and it would be very difficult to become a monk. Because it's like a little bit like military training. They first, your eye has to be crushed or disintegrate, fall apart, and then the monk can be built, you know, on top of it. Same with the army. You know, you have to obey the orders, so soldiers have to be, you know, built, but first the civil person, the normal person, has to die. Except the direction of that is a little bit different in Buddhism than in the army.
Let's hope so.
Yes, I think so. We hope so, but I think that's the truth. So, yeah, that together action is important.
Chunmun Sunim, I've heard you tell a story about a Zen teacher in Korea who did calligraphy, and the only calligraphy he made said something like, you make, you get. What do you think he meant by that?
Well, I met the monk. He passed away, actually. He was writing this. It points very clearly for me to cause and effect. Cause and effect are very clear. So whatever you make means either by your actions or your thoughts, you get result of that, and there is no, it cannot be any other way. So you better be careful what you make, because you may get it, or you will get it. That's the meaning for me, But actually, knowing this monk and hearing him speaking, you know, he was a very close friend of Sung San Sunim, Zen Master Sung San. The underlying message was, better don't make anything, which means don't get attached to anything which comes in, you know, comes in your mind, to any of your thoughts, ideas. It doesn't mean become a robot, but don't get too attached to it, because the result won't be very clear.
Chimun Sunim, thanks so much for coming in. It's great to have you on the island again.
Hey, thank you for having me here, and it's always a pleasure to be here. I hope to return soon.
Good. Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Crossing. For more information about the Puget Sound Zen Center, go to pszc.org.